Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the I Do Whatever It Takes edition, as the Bengals begin practicing in California for Sunday's Super Bowl matchup against the Rams. Coming up, I'll talk to Chris Collinsworth. He'll call the game with Al Michaels on NBC and shares his thoughts on Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and the biggest keys to Sunday's game. Then, I'll be joined by my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, to discuss a variety of topics, including one of the biggest challenges on Sunday, trying to block Aaron Donald. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play, next-level fantasy football game. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play. And by On Location, the official hospitality partner of the NFL. Visit onlocationexp.com for exclusive access to the biggest events in the NFL all season long, including Sunday's Super Bowl. Here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since getting a police escort. I called a UC basketball game on Wednesday night in Tampa, and the team got a police escort from the hotel to the arena before the game. The rush hour traffic was brutal, but the team bus was able to swerve and slalom down the interstate like a Formula One race car. In fact, when we got to the arena, one member of the traveling party said he needed Dramamine for motion sickness. It's easy to get spoiled when you travel with a professional or major college sports team, and the police escort is one of the nicest perks. Now, let's get to my guests, beginning with the premier TV analyst in the NFL, as evidenced by his 16 Sports Emmy Awards. He played in both of the Bengals' previous Super Bowls, and he'll be on the broadcast team this Sunday for NBC. It is great to visit with Chris Collinsworth. Chris, you are fond of calling Joe Burrow that cigar-smoking son of a gun. What are some of the things you like most about the Bengals quarterback?
I wish I were as cool as he is. You know, don't you? I mean, every once in a while, you meet somebody and you go, I've been living for 63 years. That kid's 25 years old, and he is 100 times cooler than I am. Like, how do you get that way after 25 years of your life, you know? And the first time I saw him wearing some of those outfits and the rose-colored glasses and all, and now I'm like, I want to go buy a pair of them. If he wins this game, I'm taking off my NBC blazer, and I'm going to go down and grab that jacket and wear it off the air and say, see you guys next season. He's special, right? He is. And I think that I'm trying to make a comparison, and maybe Pete Rose, you know, some homegrown talent that comes in here and is the superstar of the favorite franchise. And there just isn't a comparison that I can, and it's hard to describe what he means to Cincinnati, but I don't know that there's been a football player on the Cincinnati Bengals team in its history. Maybe Greg Cook, I wasn't around for that. But in its history, that would mean more than what Joe Burrow means to this community.
When did you start to think this team could compete with the elite teams in the NFL?
Yeah, right after Evan McPherson made that kick against Kansas City. You know, I think that all along there was, is this really happening thing, right? And when they played the Chiefs, I think the first time I really felt that was when they beat Baltimore in Baltimore, you know, that I went, Hey, this is a little different, because that is a team that could torment the Bengals. I know the Bengals have also tormented them some in the past. But I think some of those plays that Chase made, the catch and run plays when they were down 14-0 and looked like they could be out of games against Kansas City and against Baltimore, that slant that he caught and broke three tackles and spun out of there. And I was like, and these guys are just different. They're good. And I thought T. Higgins stepping up in the championship game when they really kind of took away Ja'Marr, and really one of my favorite players on this team is Tyler Boyd. I think Tyler Boyd is a street fighter from some other lifetime somewhere that just always has a knack for the biggest moments and those big third downs when it's third and four and everybody in the building knows where the ball is going to go. And yet he still makes that play and converts it. There's just a lot to really like about this football team.
Taking Chase instead of Penei Sewell was obviously somewhat controversial at the time. Did we learn something from the success the Bengals have had with that pick?
I do think that's true. And as you look around, the game of football is evolving. Dan, you know that. What is it now? Well, right now, offensive linemen are allowed to legally hold. Like, you would have been arrested. Anthony Munoz would have been arrested when I played if he wrapped both arms around the shoulder pads of these guys. And yet it's okay now. And I think that's a decent rule. Because what's the most important thing in the world? My God, let's protect these quarterbacks, because football is not nearly as much fun when those guys are out of the game at the end of the year and all that sort of stuff. So, but if you're going to do it that way, then those receivers are, you know, you got to have those necks. And then you have to have people that can block for them and pass rush them. But I think the three of these receivers are so complimentary, you know, the big body outside with T. Higgins, the shiftiness of Tyler Boyd inside in the clutch play, and then there's just the greatness of Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm hoping that C.J. Uzomah can play in this game, because how many times did he make those sort of breakout plays during the course of the season? So, yeah, very exciting, but maybe the thing I'm most excited about is the way this defense seems to be coming together, too. I mean, these guys came, they were basically kicked out of a lot of different places, right? I mean, they were unwanted where they were, or at least unwanted at the price that the Bengals were willing to pay. And to see the second half that they put together against the Chiefs, pretty remarkable.
Chris, you became the first person to ever use Anthony Munoz and arrested in the same sentence, by the way. I should just point that out. So let's talk about the current Bengals offensive line trying to block Aaron Donald, Von Miller, et cetera. Is that the key matchup of this Super Bowl?
Yeah, no question about it. It really is. And, you know, we've seen other defenses have weak spots on them. And when you get that, you're going to see Aaron Donald over you a lot. And so I think that Aaron Donald, one of two things, I mean, they love that overload rush. They're going to put Greg Gaines and Von Miller and Aaron Donald all on the same side, which is going to force you to block Aaron Donald one-on-one. It's going to be literally impossible to bring that far side guard across to help, because if you do, then you still have to deal with Leonard Floyd or a blitzing Troy Reader coming down that line. So it's a very difficult thing. You'll see them lined up extremely wide. Von Miller may be 5 yards outside the tackle. Aaron Donald may be a yard outside the tackle. And Greg Gaines in there on the center to keep the center from going out and helping. And then here comes Aaron Donald with about a 5 yard running start at either Quentin Spain or Akeem Adeniyi or Jackson Carmen or whoever it may be inside. And Von Miller the same on your tackle. And so Joe Burrow has to either get it out or rely on those angels that seem to tell him when danger's coming in some ways and try and make another one of those magical escapes.
Other side of the ball, what are some key things the Bengals have to do to slow down Stafford and company?
I've got to tell you, I really enjoyed watching this secondary play. You know, Chidobe Awuzie was supposed to be the answer in Dallas when he was drafted. Eli Apple was supposed to be the answer in New York. Mike Hilton made plays forever with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Von Bell with the Saints. And yet somehow when they put this whole thing together with the homegrown Jesse Bates, the whole has been better than the sum of the parts, or better than the parts, I should say. And that's fun to see in football because it does happen. Trey Hendrickson with New Orleans basically has a phenomenal year. It always, he had 13 sacks, something like that down there. And, you know, we're okay if you leave. We're okay. And he's wearing that. Sam Hubbard out of Moeller High School comes into this thing, Logan Wilson, the green dot, the guy who's running the show. And you think of all these teams, and every game has come down to an interception to turn the tide. You know, every single one of them, Logan Wilson off the tip ball by Eli Apple. You know, in the last game, you got Jesse Bates and Von Bell with that one. It's just every single one of these. And then the one before that, of course, Jermaine Pratt with the interception on the goal line against the Raiders. And it's been a defensive phenomenal play that has turned the tide. And it's unexpected. You know, I think that's the unexpected part of what Lou's been able to do with this defense, is they've just galvanized together and made it work.
The city has gone crazy for this team, as you might expect for a team going to the Super Bowl. Does it bring back memories of the Super Bowl trips in the 80s?
Oh, my gosh. You know, probably for me, especially 81, because I was their age. I was younger than Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. I was 22 and had no idea. I think the most number of football games I'd ever played in my life in one season was 12, and I played 24 that year. But it seemed so easy. You know, we were the number one seed. We had to win two home playoff games, one of them in the coldest temperature I've ever been experienced in my entire life. But we were in the Super Bowl. We won two home games and we're in the Super Bowl. Whereas this team is different. You know, both the Super Bowl teams that I was on in 81 and 88 were both number one seeds. This was a number four seed. This was a team that had to beat the Raiders to win their first playoff game in 31 years. They had to go to the home of the number one seed, Tennessee Titans, and knock them off. They had to go to the home of the Kansas City Chiefs, the presumptive Super Bowl favorite going into this whole thing, despite their seed. And now they've got to go to the home of the LA Rams and try and do it one more time. And every part of you wants to say, that's asking too much. I don't know. But you look at these guys and Joe Burrow, and he's going to go, why not? Why isn't it going to happen? You know, and so why not? I don't know. Maybe it will.
You obviously have to be neutral on the telecast. That's understood. But have you thought about what it would mean to see Mike Brown next to Roger Goodell holding the Lombardi Trophy?
It was bizarre enough for me to watch him in the championship game. And he did a great job with the speech, always gracious, as always. But for me, it would be really special. I mean, Mike Brown, I signed a contract with the USFL, and that didn't go so well. The league was sort of falling apart by the time I left, and he welcomed me back with open arms. In 88, Mike Brown allowed me to, at the end of my career, clearly at the end of my career, allowed me to go to law school classes instead of meetings, which was unheard of. I'm guessing still nobody's ever been allowed to do that. And then I go down to practice the other day, could not be more gracious, and his whole family. And I'm thrilled for them, regardless of what the outcome of this game is. I really am. But I'm mostly thrilled for Cincinnati, you know, to get that galvanizing force going one more time again in this city. And now, yes, everything politically is nuts these days, but for at least a little while, we get a chance to come together behind the Cincinnati Bengals. And it's really a special time to be here.
Nothing galvanizes a city like a contending NFL team. Chris, I really appreciate your time. Have a great call on Super Bowl Sunday, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you at a Bengals celebration.
Same to you, Dan. Good luck.
Chris, by the way, has never gone back and watched the two Super Bowls he played in. Those losses to the 49ers still sting. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play fantasy football game. This year, Ultimate Bengals awarded a weekly winner during the course of the season with tickets, autographed merchandise, and money-can't-buy experiences all up for grabs. Find Ultimate Bengals in the App Store and Google Play. And by On Location, the official hospitality partner of the NFL. Visit onlocationexp.com for exclusive access to the biggest events in the NFL, including Sunday's Super Bowl. Like Chris Collinsworth, Dave Lapham was involved in both of the Bengals' previous Super Bowl appearances, as a player in Super Bowl XVI and as a broadcaster in Super Bowl XXIII. We discuss Super Bowl 56 on Wednesday.
Lapp, you are a contemporary of Joe Namath's. You played against him in his final game in a Jets uniform. People have been comparing Joe Burrow to Joe Montana, but with Burrow's fashion sense and swag and effortless cool, I'm wondering if they've been comparing him to the wrong Joe. What do you think?
I think that's a very valid point. I mean, he does have the fashion sense. And Joe Namath, Joe Namath's cocky. No, Joe Namath was a great dude. He is a great dude. I mean, he's incredible. He's got an earned confidence, obviously, because he's so physically gifted and played quarterback at the highest level so well. I mean, when he guaranteed the win, he was confident. He had an earned confidence about him, his teammates, everybody else. That's Joe Burrow, you know. And then, yeah, some of the fashion statements are pretty impressive. So, yeah, he's a blend of Joes. Yeah, Joe's a bunch of other Joes, isn't he? It's pretty interesting. And the one common denominator is, man, these guys were all sharp, you know. I mean, the memory of Joe Burrow to take in all the information he takes in during the week from, you know, Dan Pitcher, Brian Callahan, Zach Taylor, and then all the tape he watches. He just stores all that stuff. He doesn't really take notes, you know, just stores it and then can pull it out, you know, just when he needs to diagnose and to solve the problem the defense has given him. It's really astounding. And a quick Joe Namath story. I know I've shared this with you before, Dan, but he came to a game and we had gotten to be decent friends. I did some NBC NFL work, and Joe, just for some reason, you know, took me around in New York and introduced me to some of his fans. Everywhere we went, it took like a half an hour to walk 5 minutes because of Joe Namath, you know, all over the streets. But this guy knew everybody's name. He put names with faces, you know, and he just, it was amazing. So he comes to Cincinnati to do a preseason game, and I take him around and then get something to eat in the cafeteria. They were serving food up in the cafeteria, and this lady named Leslie was the server. And I said, Joe, this is Leslie, you know, and she's all gaga because it's Joe Namath. He comes back 2 years later for a regular season game. 2 years later, we're going to get something to eat again. Same gal, Leslie, how you been? I haven't seen you in a while. She almost dropped her teeth. So did I. I'm like, we sit down. I said, Joe, how the heck did you remember her name? He goes, I just have a gift for that, man. And, you know, the memories on some of these guys is just unbelievable. Their mind is, their brain is just constructed differently, man.
That's a great anecdote. And I wonder if that's true with Joe Burrow. I wonder if he's one of those people that if he sees you, meets you, learns your name, if he could go a couple of years without seeing you and remember it.
Could very well be. It could very well be the case. And that's the thing about Joe Namath too. When I asked him about certain games that he played, he could go through an entire play-by-play of every single snap. They did this. Yeah, then they thought they'd be cute. And Eubank, my head coach, said, hey, Joe, what are you going to do? And Namath says, well, here's what I'm thinking. That's a good idea, Joe. Why don't you do that? Unbelievable. Could remember every single detail of almost every game the guy played in. I mean, that's a gift, boy. That's a tremendous gift. That'll serve you well in any walk of life you get into.
And I bet that's true with Joe Burrow. I bet he could go back to his junior year at LSU week 5 and do the play-by-play.
Agreed. I mean, things burn into his memory bank. I mean, they're there. And it's incredible the amount of information that guy can digest and comprehend, digest, and then regurgitate when need be. It's unreal. Total recall.
So Rob Gronkowski did an interview this week. He got asked the following question. Now that Tom Brady has retired, who would you want to be your quarterback right now? And he laughed and he said, I kind of like this young buck, Joe Burrow. Gronk is going to be a free agent at the end of this year. I don't see the Bengals signing him, but is this the proof of something you've been talking about, that free agents are going to want to flock to Cincinnati because of the Burrow factor?
I think so, Dan. I mean, you know, that wasn't the case. There wasn't total free agency. There wasn't movement of players like there is now when Joe Montana, you know, and particularly when he, in the early stages, when he beat us in Super Bowl 16, but you could see that he was special and that they were going to be really good for a long time. Plus, you know, San Francisco, who doesn't want to go to San Francisco? But I do think the first, there are two elements. Number one is money talks. You know, it's going to, the finances have to be there. But with all things being equal there, Joe Burrow is about a big a tiebreaker as there is in the National Football League. He's right there. He's right there with every other, you know, big time quarterback because of his youth. You know, it's like, if I go there, it's not, you know, we're just not going to be a contender for next year. We're going to be a contender for a while. I mean, this kid's just, he's just starting his path, man. And he's still, and he's playing at such a high level. So the Bengals are going to be on big time free agents, top five list that 2 years ago, there wouldn't even be consideration. I mean, they'd be laughing if people said, what is, are the Bengals on your list? No. Now they're right there. They are right there. And again, you know, economics are a big factor, but when you're in the place the franchise was in the early stages of that rebuild process, there's not enough money in the entire world probably to entice certain guys to go come to Cincinnati.
So all of the assistant coaches from the two teams did news conferences on Tuesday, including Bengals offensive line coach Frank Pollock, and he knew what was coming. Essentially, how the heck is your line, which has struggled mightily at times, going to block Aaron Donald and Von Miller? Is the challenge mostly the greatness of the individuals for the Rams, or is it hard to handle their scheme?
You know, Dan, I think like with a lot of great defenses, it is a combination. You know, I think that they've done a great job. Raheem Morris has done a great job of taking, we talked about earlier in the week, it's the Vic Fangio principles, you know, because Staley was there before he got the head coaching job with the Chargers, and they led the league in defense. You know, that's why he got the head coaching job. They were number one. And so the organization and McVay said to Raheem Morris, look, you know, you can, we'd love you to be our coordinator, but we want to run what we're running here. So I think they built the personnel and schematic to kind of like hand fits the glove deal. You know, I mean, it's one of those sorts of situations, and they're impressive. I mean, you know, the talent level is unquestioned. Von Miller has more sacks than any active player in the National Football League. Aaron Donald is maybe the best player in the National Football League. Floyd has got 9.5 sacks himself. I mean, you look at Jalen Ramsey in the back end. But honestly, Dan, besides Jalen Ramsey, I think the Bengals match up favorably. I think there's some mismatches on the back end the Bengals could take advantage of if they can somehow find a way to give Joe Burrow an opportunity. And I'm maintaining all week long that we've been talking about since a couple of weeks, I guess. If you have to use six in protection, use six. If you have to use seven, use seven. Keep a tight end in if you need to. Chip with a back, that would be the seventh, and get him out in the route. And also, not just the regular tight end, but Jackson Carmen in there. I mean, the guards are they're splitting time. So when Adeniji is in the football game at guard, let Jackson Carmen go out there. And, you know, if you've got to play, he has to check in an eligible. He has to be. He's wearing an ineligible number and he has to check in as eligible. But I mean, back in the day, I'd have to check the rule book. I don't even know if he put on like an 80s number, you know, over his jersey and went running out there as a tight end and they used him in pass protection, he wouldn't have to check in eligible. I think they've kind of moved on from that. But back in the day, they had that vest, you know, that you could pull on and go out there and have an eligible number on your chest. But I mean, if you can he's done short yardage goal line stuff like that. Isaiah Prince did it before he kicked in there at the starting tackle position. You know, Deontay could do it. Deontay Smith could do it. I mean, there's multiple guys they could use as a sixth offensive lineman. Heck, let a couple of them report eligible if you can do that. Put seven offensive linemen out there. Whatever it takes to get those guys blocked up is definitely a prerequisite. There's no doubt.
Do you have to use two guys on Aaron Donald on almost every play?
I think so. Two helmets and four hands. That's my motto. You know, you got to have two people on a man. You know, it's good to have four eyeballs and four hands working against this guy because his talent, his physical talent is so extreme it's equivalent to two people. I mean, it's the thing about him, Dan, that's most impressive to me is, you know, he can run. He runs sub 4.7 at his size, but he's also got the burst, the first step quickness. I mean, his first move off the line of scrimmage is lightning quick. I mean, it is unbelievable, the explosiveness, and he gets to your shoulder so quickly. You know, he lines up in that way outside of your shoulder or even in just on the inside of the offensive tackle. So he's like almost on the other side of the gap, close to the tackle than he is to you at guard. And me, I was always big with Jim McNally. I would always do horizontal and vertical splits, horizontal splits from, you know, center to guard, you know, 2 feet or whatever. But then you can go all the way up on the line of scrimmage as close as you can get, or you can move back vertically from the line of scrimmage. Move up or move back, and you can move back to where if you get in a three-point stance, your helmet has to be at the numbers at the center. You can't, you know, go way back or they'll flag you for illegal formation. But I would get back as far as I could against this guy because he is so explosive and gets on that shoulder so quickly. Man, I would make sure that I would buy as much space as I possibly could. I'd even get in a two-point stance and not give him a closer target. I get in a two-point stance, stay back, and make him eat up as much space with that explosiveness as possible and give myself a chance. In the freezer bowl against Big Hands Johnson, I did just the opposite. Jim McNally said, this guy's got, you know, massive hands and all that, but he's got some quick moves, but everything's in place. You know, he's not advancing to the quarterback. So he said, get up on the line of scrimmage and jam him. Get your hands on him before he can get his hands on you. Do it, you know, right away. So I was on the line of scrimmage to the point where I was almost offsides. I had to lean back to make sure my face mask wasn't hanging over the back edge of the ball, you know, because you're in the neutral zone. And I took every centimeter I could of space to get as close to the line of scrimmage. And on our first pass protection, I was in that two-point stance and waiting, boom, jammed him and shocked him. I mean, he's totally stunned him. And I remember going to the sideline and saying, Jimmy, he stunned me. I don't think nobody's ever done this to him before. He goes, well, keep doing it. Let's do it. It was great. But I play when you're going against really good players like that, play with the splits, horizontal, verticals, play with everything you possibly can. Play with your technique. You know, maybe you want to, instead of kick step, maybe you want to attack them with a step and jam them to get them off. You know, if you can get them to stop and restart, a guy like him, I think that's the biggest thing, because if you let him come off and you don't, it's almost like jamming a tight end off the line of scrimmage. You don't give him a free release, let him run into his route. Don't let this guy get a free release off the line of scrimmage on you as a pass rusher. Try to reroute him, try to jam him, in my opinion, you know, almost as quickly as you can with a good angle. And that's where the horizontal, you know, split comes into play. He's an interesting guy, though. I'd almost like say, all right, if it's not Von Miller, offensive tackle, whoever, if you're working against somebody that, if you could jam, if he's way in outside to the point where he's just inside of you, you try to hit him with one arm as you're setting to the other play. You know, almost try to be busier than a one-arm paper hanger. You know, use both your hands on both linemen. I try to come up with as many ways as I possibly can to slow that pass rush down, because as we know, Dan, that's the key to the game. It really is.
One more thought on that topic. So in the Tennessee game, the Bengals gave up 9 sacks and 3 additional quarterback hits, plus 2 sacks that didn't count. Then against the Chiefs, 1 sack, 3 quarterback hits. So obviously they bounced back after being lambasted for a week following the Tennessee game, did a nice job against Kansas City. Does that bode well, the fact that they were resilient and bounced back strong against the Chiefs?
Yeah, my only thought on that is the Titans had 3 really good pass rushers, and so do the Rams. In my mind, the only guy that was at the level of these other pass rushers for the Chiefs was Jones. The others were good, but not to the level. I mean, I think the Rams are number one, and they've shown it. They're number one in win rate as pass rushers by Pro Football Focus. And the Bengals are 30th in the NFL in pass protection win rate. So the Bengals are, you know, a couple from the bottom, and the Rams are right at the top. So that you know, matchup just comes blaring at you. And that's the problem, is having multiple guys. So I think the one thing is that the Chiefs pass rush was good, but not quite as good as Tennessee's, and not quite as good as the Rams. And I think the Bengals made some adjustments. They got the ball out of Joe's hand faster. They utilized the screen pass very well. P. Ryan, 41-yard touchdown on a screen. They got the ball out to Joe Mixon, either on the perimeter in space, or he would check down over the middle for a short pass, square his pads up, and run for yards after catch. They did a lot of good things. And, you know, I'm thinking, too, another way to slow a pass rush down, screens, draws, draw play, and, you know, intentionally get Joe Burrow out of pocket. You know, I would, if Aaron Donald and Von Miller line up over the left guard and left tackle, roll Joe by design to the right, roll him away from that stuff. You know, get him out of pocket by design, not improvisationally like he can do, which he's going to do anyway, but by design. Now, the downside to that is you're taking away a third of the football field. You know, he's not going to be throwing to that backside, and defensive players can shrink, you know, that field down from a coverage standpoint to two-thirds instead of the entire football field, the width of it. But, you know, there's pros and cons, give and take to everything. But I think, you know, there's a bunch of ways you can, you know, slow down. You're not going to defeat the pass rush. They're too damn good. But you can slow it down and control it a little bit by adopting a lot of things. And I think we're going to see a lot of that in the Bengals game plan, a lot of different things. The one thing that whenever we played a group that were really significant pass rushes, particularly on the edge, hit them as many different ways as you can. If the tackle's setting on them, slam the tight end into his side. Nothing aggravates the defensive end more than that. As the tight end's going out in his pass, slam him and release. And then if you're uncovered as a guard, slam him from the inside, you know, and then check your linebacker responsibility. They hate that. So now it's like, which way are they going to attack me from? And it slows them down, you know. It's they're not going to just pin their ears back and pass rush with reckless abandon. So I think with these really good pass rushers, if you can figure out ways to attack them, is it going to be from my outside? Is it going to be from my inside? Where's the help coming from? Man, these suckers are everywhere. How many guys are on the field? They're attacking me from everywhere. I mean, that's something that can be a factor in the football game as well. Because, Dan, like you said, man, if you just pass that and take on Aaron Donald and Von Miller one-on-one, and yeah, I'm better than you, you're not better than me. That's not going to work out.
Let's talk about the Aaron Donald on the other side of the ball for the Rams, and that is Cooper Kupp. So looking over his season, the Rams have played 20 games, including the playoffs. He's had 100-plus receiving yards in 13 out of 20, so that's amazing. But here's what amazed me even more. He has five other games where he had between 92 and 99 yards. So in 18 out of 20 games, he has had at least 92 yards. The only other time he's ever faced the Bengals, he had 220 in London. How did the Bengals cover Cooper Kupp?
Again, you know, you have to have four eyes and four hands on him, I think, too. I mean, he's worthy of definitely double team. And like the great Bill Belichick does, he makes you play left-handed. I mean, they go to Cooper Kupp so much. Higbee's the second leading receiver, and he may not be in the football game. I mean, it's Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp. And, you know, Stafford will say, oh, you know, I throw where coverage takes me. It doesn't seem like it. You know, I mean, it appears that you're going to find Cooper Kupp, and rightfully so. And the thing about Cooper Kupp is he is so slick. He is so clever. He'll give you five moves in a three-yard space that's like, man, what's he going to do? I mean, he has got all kinds of short space quickness, and all he's doing is trying to make you declare your leverage. That's his whole deal. His whole deal is I'm working off leverage, and I'm going to make you declare what you're going to commit from a leverage standpoint to me. And it's like he's playing cat and mouse with you, and he wins every damn time. He's patient, and he's a tremendous route runner, and he always figures out the leverage at a very opportune time, gets separation, and boom. Stafford's waiting for it and puts it right on him. Those two guys have a nice chemistry. And the other thing about Cooper Kupp is he's fearless. He won't run out of bounds. You know, he's like, the Bengals played some great tight ends this season. And the one characteristic they all had, you know, Kelce, Andrews, the list goes on. I'm not just going to catch the football. I'm going to score on you. I'm taking this to the house. I want to make a not just an explosive play. I want to break your back and put points on the board. That's him. He won't run out of bounds. Cooper Kupp wants to score every time he catches the football. So his run after catch, you know, he's got, when you look at him, you think, oh man, you know, what, how can he run like, he doesn't look that strong, but he is a strong runner after catch of the football. I'm not saying he's got Jamar Chase's type of lower body strength and all that, but he has definitely got some strength to him. And if you're one-on-one with him, God bless you. Good luck. You know, I mean, he's not going to let you take him down one-on-one. You're going to have to run some bodies to him. People are going to have to run to the football, and they're going to have to rally around Cooper Kupp and get him on the ground.
We are recording this conversation on Wednesday. On Monday, we witnessed a pro wrestling move by CJ Uzama, where he theatrically ripped off the knee brace and tossed it away in front of 30,000 fans at the pep rally at Paul Brown Stadium. At this point, what do you think? Do you think CJ Uzama will be able to answer the bell after hurting his MCL in the AFC Championship game?
I really do. I think that WWE move, like you described, that was a statement like, I'm done with the albatross around my neck, you know, around my knee. I'm going to play. I think that was his visual statement, you know, and he said in the presser and the Zoom during the day that I'm not going to miss the most important game of my life. I'm going to participate. I'm going to be there. I'm going to get it done. It's going to be interesting to see today how much he practices, if at all. But they're going to have to find out. If he doesn't practice today, you'd think he would have to practice tomorrow. At some point, they're going to have to test it. And, I mean, watching him when he came out with the brace, you know, jogging out there, doing 360s, you know, doing all this movement stuff. And, it would not surprise me. I think that he is a rehab maniac. I think he's driven. He knows what rehab's about after having the Achilles experience. And he rehabbed the heck out of it. And honestly, Dan, I think he was very fortunate in that his MCL sprain, there's first, second, third degree, and then total tear. But I think he was somewhere between one and two, you know. And a first degree sprain, you can almost play the following week. And if he's just a slight tick over that, it would not shock me in a two-week time frame for him to go out and give them some snaps in the Super Bowl. And like we talked about, Dan, the Swiss Army knife aspect of him, he is an answer for if people are trying to substitute you. You know, if they run their nickel and dime, their sub packages in there, and CJ Uzama's in the game, okay, get at the end of the line of scrimmage, put on your big boy pads, we're running at these little bodies. We're going to pound them. If they play their base defense and he's got a linebacker matchup, let's detach CJ. And that's okay, linebacker, you take him one-on-one. So, you know, it's like, you're punching and making them counter punch instead of the other way around. And that's an interesting thing about the Rams too, Dan, is they go up tempo a lot and they try to, it's interesting. It's going to be against the Bengals in the Super Bowl. It's like Sam Weiss with the no huddle in 88. And here it is, you know, all these years later, the LA Rams are doing exactly what Sam Weiss did, going up tempo, making you hesitant to substitute. They'll quick snap you. They're trying to get favorable matchups on the football field. And it's interesting how, man, all these years later, the late, great Sam Weiss's concept is still being utilized in the National Football League. And you knew it was going to be a revolutionary thing. And it has stood the test of time, very interestingly. And it's going to be interesting to see the position versatility that the Cincinnati Bengals have that Lou Anarumo has been looking for. It helps when you're in that situation and you have guys who can do different things. If you get caught with a defensive personnel group you really would prefer not to have on the field, if you've got some guys that can do multiple things, that makes the pain more tolerable, that's for sure.
If I run into CJ Uzama before kickoff on Sunday, I'm going to remind him that Jack Youngblood played in Super Bowl 14 with a broken leg. Remember that?
Exactly. No doubt. Man, you talk about a tough dude now. Whew. That's pure toughness right there, boy.
So I've been to 5 Super Bowls. You've been to 20 plus. It is a corporate event. Maybe 1/3 of the fans on Sunday are going to be avid Bengals and Rams fans. Does that negate the home field advantage for the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding was in the championship game, the 49er fans outnumbered the Rams fans by a bunch. The Rams had to go silent count in their own place because there were more, you know, scarlet and gold. You know, the Rams fans weren't there. The 49er fans showed up in big numbers. So, yeah, I think that it's going to be a plus for the Bengals. They're not going to have to deal with the crowd noise they dealt with in Tennessee and Kansas City. That's for sure. They're going to be able to operate normally, I think. I don't think it's going to be an issue whatsoever. You know, the issue is the Rams have – the players have stayed in their homes all week. They've had home cooking from their wife all week long. They slept in the bed that they sleep in they're on a day-to-day basis all week long. They're going to go to a hotel the night before the game Saturday night. They've gone to it every home game during the course of the season. It's business as usual, you know, for the Rams, having that having the Super Bowl in their place. And it was for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, and they won it. And I think it's a big advantage. And I think the commissioner has to think about that one a little bit long and hard. You know, and then you don't have to worry about the logistics of, you know, flying your family. You know, some family members, you know, you're still going to have to worry about flights. But they come to L.A. It's like, yeah, I can put you and you and you up. My neighbor can put you up. My good friend over here can put you up. You don't have to worry about all that hotel crap. You know, it alleviates all of those issues that the Bengals have to deal with. All the logistic problems are much, much diminished, obviously, for the L.A. Rams as opposed to what the Bengals players and organization are going through.
One more question, I'll let you go. You asked Tony Dungy a question when we talked to him the other day that I'm going to paraphrase and ask you. If you had the opportunity to talk to these guys the night before the game, what would your message be?
And boy, wasn't he great, Dan?
He was great.
Tony Dungy, oh my God, that was awesome, man. That was just Hall of Famer for a reason, multiple reasons. But man, he is something. I would say, look, guys, relax. R-E-L-A-X. Take on the Aaron Rodgers mentality. Relax. Because it's when the ball is in the air, it's just a football game like you played in high school and college and in the NFL. But all of that fanfare and everything leading up to it has just kind of put your mind in a place where maybe it shouldn't be. It's about football. It's all about football. Relax. Have fun. Go out and enjoy it. Enjoy it, you know, and honestly, Dan, I remember there was a stat in playing in Super Bowl 16, because, you know, I'm kind of nerdy about doing prep even when I was playing, and I'm watching all these shows and everything. It's like, oh, the team that turns the ball over first has lost 14 out of the 15 Super Bowls. And I'll be a son of a gun if when that first turnover happened for us, I thought, get that out of your mind. You know, you don't want to be thinking about those kind of things. But then another turn. So bottom line is, guys, take care of the football. Go out and have fun. Play loose. Enjoy it. But secure the football. I mean, turnovers, they know. I mean, they were even during the season, but shoot, they're like plus five now in three playoff games. That's been a huge deal. They have six interceptions by six different players in three football games. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. If they can continue along those lines, they got a great chance to win the football game. I mean, takeaways against the Tennessee Titans negated nine sacks. First time in NFL history, a team gave up nine sacks and won the game. Why? They won the turnover battle. Turnover battle erases a lot of bad blemishes, man. You know, it puts the makeup on and those blemishes up. So you win that battle, you know, you're in much better shape. So, but then the thing about the Super Bowl, guys, when you go out there to warm up, I remember sitting there on the bench with some of my offensive line buddies and everything and looking around, and the stadium was already full. It's like an hour and a half before kickoff. I'm like, oh, my God. They were going nuts, cheering about warm-up stuff. Guys, how guys were stretching. They go, I'm like, oh, my God. So you start to get this adrenaline rush way too early, you know? So it's like, handle warm-ups. Don't do too much in warm-ups. Do exactly what you've done all season long. You have a protocol as such that you go through to get ready for the football game. Do not change it. Don't do anything differently for the Super Bowl. Even if it's a longer period of time, you know, pregame's longer, more commercials, all that kind of stuff. just do what you do. Don't do more, you know, and handle the long pregame. Halftime, Dan, forever. Oh, the halftime. When do we broadcast the Super Bowl? The halftime show is ridiculous to look because of all the commercials they need to get in. So we have to adjust to it too, but the players have to adjust a lot more. I mean, it's like, it seems like you're in there forever compared to a regular season game or even a playoff game leading up to it. So there's just things like that that maybe, you know, guys need to be aware of and just don't let it affect you. You know, just handle it, move on, get through it. Whatever it is, what it is, there's nothing you can do about it.
I'll do one more podcast to preview the Super Bowl, and my guests will include Bengals president Mike Brown. If you are heading to Los Angeles for the game, here's an invitation to join Lapp and me for the Bengals Pep Rally Show on location this Friday at Barney's Beanery in Santa Monica. We'll do the show from 1 to 4 local time, meaning you can listen in Cincinnati from 4 to 7 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play, next-level fantasy football game, and by On Location, the official hospitality partner of the NFL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.